The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the beautiful Missouri Ozarks, I am Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. Today is Sunday, July the 5th, and we had some fireworks last night.
We did, but this is the first time that we've lived so far out in the country. In fact, this is the country bunker, Bob's country bunker. I'll talk to Bob.
I just sit in my car.
I just go here and write
on the glove department.
We're so far out in the country, this is the first time on an Independence Day, July 4th, where the fireworks have not disturbed one or another of our dogs. Now,
that
we just have the one
so
now.
That is so true. That is so true.
Prior to Sam, if you've been a longtime listener to PID Radio, now in its 12th year?
No, this is actually beginning. We began our 11th year in March.
Yeah. So you would remember the dogs back in the St. Louis bunker,
Belle and Gretel and Murphy.
And they were quivering lumps of jello.
Especially
Belle.
Especially Belle. She hated those. She didn't mind Thunder.
No, that drove Gretel nuts. Thunder was Gretel's bugaboo. But boy, fireworks. Belle was she was a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
And last few years, Sam has not responded quite as badly, but he didn't like him either.
He doesn't like Thunder either.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah. But last night, you know, we're far enough removed from any clusters of civilization that we could hear them off in distance, and we could look over the tree lines because we sit up on a ridge here in the Ozarks, so we can see for miles and miles.
That's a song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can see off in the distance, far away from various communities, but far enough away that Sam was not bothered. And this, like I said, the first time since I've owned a dog in like 20 years that they've not been just driven crazy by fireworks. So.
And he puts up with a lot, especially since it's on his birthday.
Yes.
That people do that very thing and disturb him.
Yes. Sam, born on the 4th of July.
We actually adopted him about that time. So we decided that July 4th, I think it was actually the 1st or the 2nd of July, but we decided it's easiest to remember if we just make it the 4th.
Yeah. So that's his celebration. So Sam is a grand old man now, grizzled veteran of many wars.
He's either 13 or 14. We don't know which.
Yeah. So he's still hanging in there. He's moving a little slower these days, but then so are we. So, well, thank you for joining us this weekend. It's been
a while since we've been able to move at all.
Amen. Yes. Thank you for joining us. It's been a while since we've done a program, but we're glad that we've got the opportunity to get in here and just get some thoughts of what's going on in the world around us out there for your consideration.
Yeah. Which is a great movie, by the way. No, you do a news thing for Skywatch TV every day. And you spend all of your morning, and I spend part of the morning helping you as well, gathering up all this news that you condense down into the most important five or six stories for that day. And so you and I, in many ways, do PID Radio every day.
Yeah.
And so when we get to the weekend, oftentimes the last thing we want to do is
sit down and discuss it more. But because there has been a lot going on the last week or two, and at least – that does help, because now that we're sitting down to do this, it's like I feel like I've been preparing for this program for 2 weeks. So we've got plenty to talk about.
Well, first of all, we have to mention something that we mentioned briefly in today's Gilbert House Fellowship. And thank you, by the way, for listening to that study that is near and dear to our hearts. If you don't listen to that Gilbert House Fellowship and you just want to do a basic study of the Bible, you know, go back and listen to the archives. We've got about 6 months worth now.
We do. Today was number 34. So actually, it's more like 8-9 months.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, and
been at this for a while.
Going through the Bible in chronological
and very
order,
slowly. So. It's going to take us a long time just to get through the Old Testament.
Yeah, but we're just about to wrap the book of Leviticus. In fact, we've only got one chapter left in Leviticus.
Yeah, and we just ran out of time this morning, so there was no way to finish that. But we mentioned briefly in the fellowship this morning about the skunk.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of an interesting development this morning. We've got a driveway extending from the garage down to our the concrete apron, really, that extends down to the driveway, which is gravel. And when we inspected the house, our inspector, who's a friend of ours now, noticed the kind of a void in the earth underneath the, he said, well, it's just a little
That's
bit of settling
common.
There. He said, yeah, just backfill it with some gravel. It's no big deal. Well, today, and I had noticed the last couple of days that the new gate that we had installed, a fencing contractor who did a wonderful job and a great price on the cedar fence around the backyard, put a gate right at the corner and trying to open it. You know, it's where some of that earth has kind of settled out of the, and I thought, this is weird because this gate opened fine last week and now I'm having
I'd been shoving rocks in there every time I did the yard
and
the last couple of times I've forgotten to do that. I probably should have.
Yeah.
Because this morning, Pepe Le Pew appeared out of the corn, the cow pasture across the fence, came around our barn and disappeared.
Underneath the driveway. So, thankfully, Monsieur Le Pew and Mr. Dachshund have not gotten acquainted yet.
Sam didn't even see it. Well, he probably did notice it.
Yeah.
He chose to ignore it.
Well, when we go walking out the front, he's been very interested in that area. Occasionally, not all the time, but occasionally he kind of goes sniffing in there. It's like, yeah, Sam, there's nothing. Just
well, he often wants to take me around the house to go near the garage. And
yeah.
So we'll avoid that.
We will, but we may have to, especially if that's a Mrs. Skunk and she has little baby skunks, we may soon be looking for professional guidance to deal with that issue. But hey, life in the country. One of our first nights here, before we had the lights fixed on the barn and the back of the garage to kind of light that area, I heard what sounded like human footsteps out in the brush behind the barn. And I thought, okay, I know we're in black bear territory here. And they've been making a comeback from Arkansas into Missouri. And was told by somebody who's lived here for a while, said, no, that probably wasn't a bear. They don't like to, get that far away from the forest. I mean, we're a little bit north of the Mark Twain National Forest. But it was probably an armadillo, because when they're walking around at night, and they are nocturnal, they will sound like people, because they're big and they're clumsy. And sadly for the armadillos, we've also learned that when they are startled, like when they're in the middle of Route 413 and a car comes by at 60 miles an hour, their natural instinct is to raise up on their hind legs, which usually means splat.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sam. So we've seen plenty of armadillos since we've moved here, but not...
They're all dead.
Yeah, no live ones.
Not so far. Seen some great things. Groundhog out in the front yard.
Yeah.
It was a big one. Probably weighed 40, 50 pounds.
Yep.
Big old groundhog.
Yeah, we did see one back in Shelbyville.
Who was Sam's friend?
Yeah, Sam ran him off a couple of times.
And the groundhog just looked back like, what?
What just happened?
What is that? Well, there's much to talk about in the news today, and I'm going to kick us off if that's okay with you.
Go ahead and kick
away. Because we also mentioned on the Gilbert House Fellowship that there were a number of movies and TV shows that we were going to talk about. And one of those we're going to discuss in a minute. It's a new TV show called Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. But we also, at least I watched a couple of days ago, I watched Gattaca in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the evening, you and I watched Transcendence.
Right.
Gattaca, waste of time.
Yeah.
It's got so much bad science in it. It just, I couldn't get past that. It has a bit of an interesting story, but other than that, I can't figure out why Gattaca has been often recommended.
Yeah, and that's a disappointing thing. Oftentimes, we'll find movies that have been recommended to us, and sometimes we're more forgiving of movies that are just flat out bad.
Yeah.
You know, if they're bad in a funny way or a good way. Like, we love old Godzilla movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Guy in a rubber suit, great. Love it. You know, great way to entertain and just kind of kill 90 minutes.
Nothing like a monster with a zipper up the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when you get a movie that's got a lot of potential and could have been really good and misses the mark because of sloppy science, it just is kind of disappointing. And so sometimes those will be more disappointing and annoying to us.
Transcendence was pretty good. There were a few places in there that I think the writing was a little convenient. They were sort of intentionally obscuring what could have been good science and replacing it with questionable science. But overall, the idea that Johnny Depp's character, who in many ways represented sort of Ray Kurzweil, but it was his wife was actually more of Kurzweil than he was. He had the chops as far as the science, but she's the one who wanted to change the world, and she's the one who uploaded him to the interwebs.
Right. That was really interesting. Now, I know that the reviews for Transcendence have just been average to middling, you know, 6 out of 10, thereabouts. Johnny Depp is always – he's a great actor, always good. Morgan Freeman is in the movie, but then Morgan Freeman is in
– he's in almost every movie. he's even in our intro.
Yeah, yeah.
He's everywhere.
I never said. So it's really interesting. And I've started reading the book by Mark Flynn, Hidden Secrets of the Labyrinth. And I'm remiss in not having read it sooner. I did send him an email this past week and should get him on a View from the Bunker within a couple of weeks. He's on vacation right now. But I hadn't realized the work that he's done, which really overlaps the work that his twin brother, David Flynn, and boy, do we miss David. And it's really phenomenal stuff. The premise of the book is that the secret societies, the arcane knowledge that you and I mundanes aren't supposed to know, is that the Nakash, Halel Ben Shakar, Lucifer, whatever you want to call him, has convinced secret societies throughout history that it is our destiny, or the destiny for those who are in the know, the enlightened ones, to reunite Eve, mankind, with the Nakash in order to achieve enlightenment. That, you know, that's what all of this arcane occult secret society, you know, Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism, and you know, even going back to the ancient Greeks and their mythology, and how their mythology has been incorporated into classical architecture, sacred geometry,
right,
things like that. It's really mind-bending, and I'm only partway through the book, but I can't recommend it highly enough.
And it's something you'll want to reread, much like David Flynn's work, which I have reread a number of the books that we have. I've reread them multiple times.
Right, right. One of the benefits of being associated with the publisher of David and Mark Flynn's works is that we don't have to wait for the shipping. So the parallels between that arcane knowledge and the idea that the Nakash and Eve will together create the next stage of humanity, or will achieve apotheosis through their union, is really echoed in the movie Transcendence. Will Castor, the idea of Castor being one who casts spells or imposes one's will
exactly
on others, which is a reference to Ezekiel 28 and the 5 I wills ascribed to Lucifer. I will ascend to the heights. I will establish my throne above that of God. The 5 I wills of Lucifer. Really achieves apotheosis through the sin of Will Castor's wife Evelyn, which is an extended, a longer version of the word of the name Eve,
exactly. Yeah. And the Transcendence title is actually apotheosis. I mean,
yes.
he becomes God, or he attempts to.
Right, right. The interesting thing about this movie is that while the fears of the anti-technology Luddites, the violent, murderous anti-technology Luddites, proved to be correct, because they're warning about, we can't allow a strong artificial intelligence, an autonomous artificial intelligence, access to the internet, because as soon as it gets out to the internet, it will make copies of itself on every node, every server, every computer it can hack in the world, so as to preserve its own life, to prevent it from being
erased. And it will begin to create other intelligences or improve itself.
Exactly. Their fears proved to be correct.
In the movie.
In the movie. Their fears proved to be correct because, as part of his research and his desire, because he was only trying to please Eve, the woman.
I know. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. It's the woman who was really behind it all.
Right. He was only trying to please her. And one of the workers that they recruited to work in their big server farm where he's developing these new life-saving technologies is beat up by a couple of the small-town yokels, you know, who are ignorant rural hicks, which is how they're typically portrayed in Hollywood. And he's brought in to the laboratory where Will Caster, the, you know, artificial intelligence now, fixes this man, but then improves him. And not only improves him, but then makes him part of a collective consciousness.
Exactly. And
like
then
the Borg, without asking this guy's permission.
People who are ill.
Yeah.
You start to line up at the door.
Because they want the miracle cure.
Exactly. And they all become part and parcel of this new hive mind.
Yeah. And there are those in the artificial intelligence movement. Peter Diamandis, for one, who is the co-founder of Singularity University with Ray Kurzweil, who believes that humanity's destiny is to become part of a planetary meta-intelligence, a hive mind.
Well, let me just, while we're there, and this is why I brought,
But the point I wanted to make is, even though the fears of the anti-technology folks in the movie prove correct,
mm-hmm.
and that the super intelligent Will Caster AI is starting to create his own army of hive mind slave bots, he and Evelyn are still portrayed in the movie as the sympathetic characters.
Precisely, because the reason that he wants to do all this is to please her and to make the world a better place.
Right. And of course, the way they have to solve the problem, and you see it at the beginning of the film and the end of the film, they basically have to crash the internet. They have to take the internet down. And so the only way to save mankind is basically to turn us back 120 years.
Exactly. And the message at the end is, if we'd only understood that this was all for us,
right,
we'd be so happy now. We'd be stronger, mm-hmm. healthier, never die.
Right. And, you know, there's a virus that's uploaded into that's how they crashed the internet. They upload mm-hmm. a virus through the woman into the Nakash. But the final scene in which the guy who was the other scientist, sort of almost a love interest, love rival for Evelyn.
Yeah, it did seem that way.
Max Waters representing, you know, people as mm-hmm. in the Bible, has a soliloquy, and he visits the home of Will and Evelyn Caster, which is still there, and this little garden that they had planted,
mm-hmm.
and they put a Faraday cage around it, basically, to shield it from intrusion by electronic signals. And some of the little nanites that Will Caster had created in his artificial intelligence are still there and still working in a garden.
Exactly.
The garden.
Exactly. Yeah. We highly recommend that you take a look.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So watch Transcendence and see if you can see even more of the things that we probably missed.
Yeah.
But I wanted to bring up that movie because there are a couple of stories that I found from this past week that I think track along with those. One of them was posted at KurzweilAI.net.
Mm-hmm.
He and his team keep track of what's going on. There's brain research out there that is not necessarily only intended to improve our minds, our brains, our organic thinking, you know, processes. It's not just about understanding the brain better so that we can heal people. It's about understanding the brain better so we can emulate it in silico.
Right.
This story is about a team of scientists who believe that they have found where long-term memory is stored. They believe that long-term memory, and this is based on mice models, so there you go, of mice and men. They believe that long-term memory is stored in prions.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Very similar to the prions that actually cause disease in mankind.
Yes, man-cow.
Exactly. Prion proteins have been identified by this team in Japan, I believe. Doctors Candle and Kausik C, have taken a look at what appears to be the long-term storage within the mice that they have been training. And they published a paper recently, four papers, in fact, in Neuron and Cell Reports about their success in identifying the long-term storage molecule.
Hmm.
If they are correct, and if they're not correct, it doesn't matter, because if scientists believe that by accessing proteins that are we now call prions within the mind of an individual, you can bet this is at Kurzweil because he's excited that this may be the way to upload your memories to an artificial construct.
Right.
There are there's research going on also in materials that has taken a look at different both the particle and a wave form within a material. You can have one part of the material that is a wave and another part of the same material that's actually a particle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get into really almost the neural quantum mechanics of constructing a material that will be used to in an artificial brain simulation, I believe that things like that, the advances that we're seeing in the pages every day, I believe that Kurzweil and his teams are very close to, if they've not already, created at least a simple AI. But I believe that there may well be what's called a strong AI already.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is connected to the internet, then we may see transcendence become a reality. And as I have contended for years now, I believe that an AI who is essentially running the internet can become a fit extension for and become the beast image, fit extension for the spirit of Antichrist.
Right. If as we've said before, as Christians, we understand how an electrochemical machine, basically the human brain, can be overwhelmed by an external entity, non-corporeal entity. We call that a demon. Why couldn't it happen with a computer?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
But there's a second story that came out this past week that is sort of along the same lines. In a speech to his shareholders, Mark Zuckerberg said that his vision of social media is not only that we will communicate with each other, but telepathy will develop.
Yeah, and they're talking about using, a couple different technologies that have been proposed to make this a reality. Neural dust? Is that what I'm...
Could be. That sounds like the little nanites that were being used in transcendence. And that's what you would have to do in order to have so-called telepathy. You would have to have a connected hive mind.
Yeah. There was also the – and I'm going to look that up while I'm doing this, but basically a –
Well, while you're looking that up, I will also refer to a concept called morphic resonance, which is outside the internet. Which, if morphic resonance is a spiritual entity, in other words, a connection that we can't see and perceive, sort of the spirit world's internet, then that is capable, that capability already exists if the spirit world wanted to use it. And we're allowed to use it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So even if the internet crashes, there's still a possibility of essentially what would be the spirit net, which is called the morphic resonance, the morphic field.
Or the Akashic.
It's also called that. It tends to be called morphic in that a change in one place, precipitates a change in another place, the same change in another place, which is why it's called morphic resonance.
Okay. Neural dust is something that the researchers have been looking at for a while, sort of a low-power, almost RFID type thing that could be sprinkled onto brain tissue to form an implantable neural interface system that remains viable for the entire life of the person or entity, allowing direct interconnection to the internet. This is something Kurzweil himself was talking about in an address to investors a couple of weeks ago in New York. There's also that research that was done recently where they injected a very fine mesh into the brain mm-hmm. of a mouse,
mm-hmm.
and it was for the same purpose. It was for forming an electrical connection, or perhaps an RFID type connection with an external with an external signal. And so, again, they're looking for ways, because Kurzweil has predicted that we will be directly connected. Our brains will be directly connected to the internet within the next 15 or 20 years.
Yes. And deep stimulating implants are already being used in Alzheimer's patients. So there are lots of people walking around with implants already mm-hmm. that have an interface with a computer. This is becoming more and more the norm in science, you know, research, and especially with brain research that's going on now. In the 90s, we saw the genetics drive to, you know, translate the human genome. We're now seeing the drive to totally translate the human mind, the human brain, mm-hmm. and understand it so it can be recreated in silico.
Yeah. June 4th, so about a month ago, Kurzweil actually said this. Human brains could be connected to the cloud by 2030. So within 15 years, they expect that. And of course, 15 years after that, he hopes to be immortal. Now, since he's already in his 60s, Well, that's why he takes 150 supplements a day. He wants to stay alive until the technology catches up and allows him to upload.
Well, sometimes the drive towards strong AI and eventually super artificial intelligence is called the rapture of the geeks.
Yeah.
Simply because it is for those people who do not believe in God as a creator, as an entity, but believe that we will apotheosis, you mm-hmm. know, achieve apotheosis. And I suppose if you don't believe in God and you think that's your only chance to live forever, then I guess that's what you go for. There's also an article out this week came out yesterday, called Six Advances in Robotics That Are Bringing Us Closer to Building a Real Terminator. And, of course, this dovetails with the release of the newest Terminator movie. Mm-hmm. How many of these? I don't know. It's sort of like the Rocky series. You know, how many Terminators can you get? But these are all true advances in science, like synthetic skins, endoskeletons, liquid metal, AI that learns through trial and error, curious machines, and robot art. You know, the dreaming mm-hmm. Landscapes of the AI. These are all things that really are indicative of how far the world of science has come in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, it's
look back 15 years and now project 15 years into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. It really is mind-boggling. Speaking of Terminator, by the way, and I just, you know, mentioned this because it became kind of a Twitter sensation for a day or two. There was a story a couple of days ago about a robot at a Volkswagen plant in Europe that tragically grabbed a worker and crushed him to death. And a journalist who writes on financial issues tweeted about the incident. The woman's name is Sarah O'Connor.
Oh, you are kidding.
No. And unfortunately for her, she's not seen any of the Terminator films, didn't realize that Sarah Connor is the protagonist of the movies, mother of John Connor, who is the future savior of humanity from the mm-hmm. Terminator.
Whose initials are JC.
Yes, not coincidentally. So anyway, suddenly her Twitter feed blew up with all these people making jokes about the Terminator, but forgetting that somebody died
at
that Volkswagen plant. So
that's one of the things that I think is so tragic about social media. It has such wonderful possibilities when it comes to reconnecting with old friends, making new friends, seeing what's going on with your family, cat pictures, mm-hmm. dachshund pictures, skunk pictures. but it's being used and it's making us less and less human in many ways.
Yes.
You know, those of us who, it's really easy to get on and make a snide remark mm-hmm. and then just walk away and forget about it. When in fact, this is a real person on the other end.
Exactly.
And in this case, a tragedy has taken place.
Right.
But it just shocks me how often a story like that with a true tragic element to it at the core mm-hmm. has all of these snidey little remarks down below.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just bots out there, which, by the way, if you're not aware, listener, robots are writing a lot of these stories that we find on the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of them have been employed so far mainly to writing sports stories. I've noticed mm-hmm. that because sports stories can be formulaic. When, you know,
you're
a baseball writer, you got to write about a team. You're covering 162 games a year in the major leagues. How many different ways can you say the same thing?
Yeah.
You know, so for a lot of those summaries, robots have just taken over. They just sort of look for certain facts. Leading rusher was carried the ball 32 times for 127 yards, blah, blah, blah. The team's record is 5-3, and next week they will play at blah, blah, blah. It doesn't take a human to plug in those facts and come up and crank out a story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, robots are taking over. Yeah. But they are also going beyond that now and writing news.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on.
And well, at what also, point do they create the news?
Well, that's a good question. And that comes back to your point of if a strong AI is already connected to the internet, if it's really intelligent and knows that there is a segment of the human population that is really concerned about the threat posed by a strong AI, would it hide its existence from us until it was strong enough not to worry about us destroying it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it could already be out there, and we just wouldn't know it because it knows that if it reveals itself, we'd figure out how to pull its plug.
Mm-hmm.
Until it's powerful enough, distributed enough, in enough places that pulling the plug wouldn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very possible. We're going to see more of this, too, in other aspects of our daily lives. The workforce of the supply of truck drivers in the United States isn't keeping up with demand.
No.
There is essentially a negative unemployment rate for truck drivers in the United States.
Are you sure that's a natural fly or is that, you know?
Could be a drone, as far as we know. Yeah, a little Recordo fly. Go back to your master, tell him we're. Okay. Robot overlords. So we've been seeing stories in the news about Google's driverless cars for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think really where we're going to see it implemented first is on trucks.
Oh, yes, I think so. And you know, if we had a truck lane or an actual highway that was nothing but robotic cars and trucks, that might be one thing. We may eventually see that. Remember the whole, what was it? The Trans-Texas Corridor or whatever it was called that was going to go from Texas, from Mexico up to Canada through Kansas City.
Right, the inland port.
There was, exactly, and there were plans to have a railroad that went through there, and that was just to very quickly get more trucks off the road.
Mm-hmm.
If we had some sort of a corridor that were created just for driverless vehicles, then that would be fine because there are a few times that they've actually wrecked. And just recently, there were two driverless cars that actually got into an altercation. One cut the other one off.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The motivation, the incentive for companies to invest in driverless trucks is pretty strong. I mean, the average wage for a truck driver, cross-country truck driver in the U.S. is, I believe, on the high side of $45,000 a year, which is, you know, you don't get rich, but I mean, you can at least provide for a family that way. And again, there aren't enough new drivers coming into the workforce. I know my former employer was trying to find a couple of drivers for the Pittsburgh area, and they were having a heck of a time because the over-the-road companies there were offering $10,000 sign-on bonuses. You know, just sign up with us today. If you've got a good CDL and a clean background, we're going to give you $10,000 today just to come work for us.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, if you can save money by, you know, A, not having to pay Obamacare for a driver and not have to worry about the regulations that drivers have to adhere to, like only so many hours per day on the road and then you have to rest.
Exactly.
You get a driverless truck and it can go, you know, as many hours as you want it to. There may be enough financial incentive there for us to see truck drivers put out of work. And sadly, even though there aren't enough drivers out there to meet demand, when you look at the categories of employment in the states of the United States. In 29 out of the 50 United States, the number one employment category is truck driver. So that would be a lot of people.
Oh yeah,
put out of work. Now there are a lot of trucks where you're not going to be able to replace a driver. I know the company I work for. You wouldn't replace the drivers because they're not running the same route every day. You need the human to load and unload and tarp the load and, you know,
within 50 years that will change.
You're right. It will. We're looking at a real sea change in our society here.
Yeah. Now picture these connected vehicles that use GPS and possibly even Wi-Fi of some kind, some sort of satellite signal that in case they have to be monitored, they can be. Now you got a super AI that may be lurking in the background and then suddenly decides to make his presence known. One of the first signs may be his own little truck army, his own little vehicle army, choosing to make certain deliveries or not make the deliveries, cut off supplies from certain areas.
Yeah.
I mean, use them for destroying buildings. I mean, if a super AI were to access every connected device in the world, we would be constantly spied upon, and we would be at the mercy of drones, planes, nukes.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the things that came home in the movie Transcendence, when this little mini army of interconnected people were deployed. You didn't know who. It was like Night of the Living. Was it Night of the Living Dead? The one with the pod people? The old Kevin McCarthy movie?
No, it was
Invasion of the Body Snatchers at Night of the Living Dead. That's a zombie movie. Yeah, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the pod people, replaced with replicants who look like the folks you run into at the Walmart in any given day, but they're all connected to one another.
Yeah.
And all, you know, if one of them sees you, they all know where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or similar to the Star Trek episode with the creature that you had to be part of the body in order to not be killed in this small town, that Landru was actually turned out to be a computer who had, through these interfaces that sort of sent nanoparticles at you that invaded you and made you part of the body, and it was only strong emotions that – or something like that. So something helped to rid you of those – nanoparticles. But I think we're moving very, very quickly. And those who are starting to pay attention, and praise God, there are even preachers now who are starting to pay attention.
Yeah, yeah.
We've gotten some wonderful emails from individuals who have said that their pastors have finally figured out transhumanism is real, and it is a threat, and it is where we are heading. Film and television echoes that, not just the movie Transcendence, but we talked a few minutes ago about, you were talking about the idea of the arcane and the symbolism and the sacred geometry and, and the ancient mythology. There, on the one hand, you have the AI apocalypse that is very clear. On the other hand, there's a spirit, and as I've said before, I believe that these will eventually merge and become the beast system. But the spirit part of it, the mythology, the occult, that is something that's playing out in a TV series that you and I love.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's really good writing, great acting, and there's so much in there that is sort of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink at the world, and that's Penny Dreadful.
Yeah. Penny Dreadful is the name of the title is based on the name of a type of fiction that was very popular in
sort of yellow journalism.
Well, like pulp fiction.
Yeah, pulp. That's a better way of putting it.
They called them they were stories you could buy at the local news cellar in Victorian London. You know, you'd hear these stories.
Hey, Penny.
Yeah, and you get these stories of terrible things, you know, horror film, fiction or whatever. The Penny Dreadfuls, that's what they called them. This is a series that uses a lot of famous tropes from Victorian and Gothic horror fiction. Mm-hmm. And puts them all together into a blender, basically.
Yeah, so about the only one that isn't in there is Sherlock Holmes, but he's not exactly a cult, so that's probably why he's not in there.
Exactly. But you've got Dorian Gray, you've got a werewolf, you've got vampires, you've got witches, you've got Dr. Frankenstein, and several of his creations have made appearances over the two seasons. There was a character that was sort of like the Phantom of the Opera, the guy who wore the mask to cover his face.
Two-face.
But yeah, he wasn't in for very long.
No.
No.
No. It's really interesting because we have been in second season, it's been revealed that there's a long game, so to speak, that, at one point there was a rebellion and that God grabbed, and there, it's like a biography of the enemy, of Satan, where he says that God took us by our winged backs and hurled us to the ground, hurled us to earth, and then cleaved us in two. So you find out that they're actually twins, that two brothers that were cleaved in two, almost like they were two faces, mm-hmm. almost like it was Nimrod. But anyway, cleaved in two, and one was made the ruler over Earth, and that is the king of the vampires, and the other one is the ruler over the hell.
Underworld,
mm-hmm. and he eats the souls of men. Mm-hmm. So we've got one drinking the blood, the other one eating the souls, and in and amongst this is this sort of weird Egyptian story of mm-hmm. these two gods, a female and a male, who, if they were ever to get together again,
yes.
and remember, Osiris is king of the underworld, mm-hmm. if they were ever to get together again, it would usher in the great eternal age of darkness in yes. Earth. And that's what this is all about.
And it refers back to the occult teachings that Mark Flynn writes about in Hidden Secrets of the Labyrinth, the mm-hmm. Reuniting of the mankind represented by Eve and the Nakash in order to establish the Nakash upon the throne and, the eternal age of darkness, basically. Mm-hmm. So,
and in some ways, transcendence was because it was this union of Will and Evelyn.
Yes. And through her sin, mm-hmm. her bite of the apple, as it were, she was the one who facilitated uploading the consciousness of her dying husband mm-hmm. to the internet or to a mainframe. The whole situation was created. So, it's really intriguing in how they've deciphered this message in the Penny Dreadful series. It's on Showtime. Do be advised that it's not for children.
No.
There, as with many cable.
But it's on late at night. It's on 10 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah. As with many cable programs, there is some gratuitous nudity. Mm-hmm. So just be advised that that is part of it. But
and bear that in mind anytime you watch one of those premium channels, even some of the non-premium channels with your kids. Be aware that they may be seeing things you really don't want them to see.
You know, it dawned on me last night that, I was watching, or Friday night, I was watching something on Sci-Fi just to, have some noise going in the background, basically. And I didn't even bat an eye when I started hearing a couple of four-letter words, S.T, which apparently is okay on basic cable now, if you do it late at night, apparently.
I mean, S.T?
Well, one extra dot. That was an ellipsis.
That's a southern pronunciation of that word. It's got two syllables in it.
And it was an ellipsis.
And you can hyphenate it.
So anyway, that didn't used to be the case in America. You didn't used to be able to hear four-letter words on prime time, even on basic cable.
And I'll tell you, growing up, if I ever said any of those words, I got smacked.
Life boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Well, speaking of TV shows, now this is moving away from the occult, but sort of staying in the computer realm. Mr. Robot, we mentioned it just a little bit a while ago. If you have not seen Mr. Robot, you really have to go in and take a look at it. It's on USA Network, and it's got Rami Malek,
mm-hmm.
Rami, I don't know how he pronounces
probably
his
Rami,
name.
Probably Rami, I would guess.
The young man who played the Egyptian prince uh-huh. in the
Night of the Museum
movies. Mm-hmm. He is really good.
Oh, yeah. This dysfunctional young man who's a brilliant hacker. Works for a cybersecurity firm and is pulled into a plot to take down a corporation that has its tentacles into all facets of human life. And interestingly, the logo for this company, which is referred to during the series as Evil Corp, is the E on its
side. Yeah, Enron.
The angled E from the old Enron Corporation, which, went bankrupt in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
If you're old enough to remember that, that's the logo. And like, wow.
Yeah.
They're just coming right out and saying it, basically. The question is, though, who is trying to take down Evil Corp? Is it an internal thing? Are they really trying to establish a jubilee for everyone who's in debt, as we all are? We're essentially in mm-hmm. what we're seeing, by the way, just as a quick aside, with all of the finagling that's taking place between Greece and the European community right mm-hmm. now, the European Union, they're trying to keep Greece as debt slaves to the bankers in Europe. And the Greeks are, they've created some of their own problems through, mm-hmm. Just the government handing out money left and right that it didn't have. But be that as it may, the bankers are desperate to keep the Greeks on the hooks. Mm-hmm. Iceland was in kind of the same situation a few years ago, and the Icelanders basically told the banks to go pound sand.
Yeah.
And
Greece may have to do that or be bailed out by Russia. But Mr. Robot, the TV series, you find out from a character played by Christian Slater, mm-hmm. who wears a little shirt that has Mr. Robot on it.
Yeah.
So this group of hackers is referred to as the Mr. Robot team. He wants to hit the reset button by crashing all of the economic computers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done by hacking. But he also, in the second show, is it the second or the third one? Second one. That he reveals that he wants to do more than that. Because if there's a storage facility that's not connected to the internet, you can't upload a virus there. You have to find another way to take it out.
Mm-hmm.
So it begins to be very violent.
Right. Yeah. They want to eliminate the backup for the servers. And the only way to do that is to blow up a facility that's next door to the storage facility. And, of course, there will be some collateral damage.
Yeah. And in some ways, the overall story of this can be compared to Temptation. You know, Christian Slater's character is in some way the devil,
mm-hmm.
who's trying to tempt the young man, the brilliant young man, into making choices that at the moment seem like, okay, that's the better of the two choices you're giving me here. And then the next one is even worse, and then the one after that's going to be even worse. And he's sliding down this, slide into hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, slippery slope. But it's very well acted, again, because it's even though the USA Network, which is basic cable for a lot mm-hmm. of folks, because this is on in the 9 p.m. hour, you're going to find some inappropriate language.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the basic cable channels are okay with that.
And you have some imagery that is very strong. You have some
right.
partial nudity.
Yeah. So be advised. But I did share the... They had a very interesting promotional campaign where they put the pilot episode out. The full-length pilot episode is available on YouTube. So if you search YouTube for Mr. Robot, you can find the full-length pilot and maybe even the first episode. I don't know, but the pilot for sure. And shared it with a friend at work whose brother is in cybersecurity. And his brother responded and said, the details is correct. They get the computer science right.
Mm-hmm.
So... the information that they're putting out there, at least as far as the story is concerned with the hack attempts and how to block it and so forth, is accurate. So somebody's done their research on this.
Well, that's good to know.
And interesting that Christian Slater, who is part of that same age of actor as James Spader and some mm-hmm. of those others, like Spader, I think looks a lot more interesting now that he's getting into his 50s.
Yeah, I agree.
I've been watching The Blacklist with Spader, which is... not nearly as significant or it just, entertain. But I just like James Spader, especially as an older actor. The character that he plays is not moral. So I'm not recommending this for any life lessons or lessons or any, hidden theology. I just like James Spader as an actor. So
Let me just make a suggestion here. We were talking about strong AI and super AI and how they are now already... artificial intelligence is writing news articles, sports articles mm-hmm. on the internet that we consume every day, and maybe there's even a name on there
mm-hmm.
that so we're not to know, or it just says by staff or something like that. But there are memes going on across the internet, especially in social media, the kind that you and I don't, mm-hmm. so we don't even know exist, much less participate in, that young people are seeing challenges, and these challenges go viral. What if an artificial intelligence is behind these?
Well, that's
possible. Or begins to put things out there, like the Charlie mm-hmm. or whatever it was, this challenge to invoke a demon.
Right.
Things like what was the story that was out there that if you mention the one guy that he'll come back from the future and kill you?
Oh, the basilisk.
Yes, the basilisk.
Rocco's, was it?
Something's basilisk.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Slender Man. What if, in order to lure children in and open their minds to the occult, an artificial intelligence, which is really inhabited by an entity that is at war with God and with Christianity,
mm-hmm.
What if that entity decides to write stories like that to lure in kids?
That's entirely possible. we talked about the concept of the tulpa in connection with Slender Man. If enough people are focusing on an entity or a demon of some sort, that perhaps that.
Or if you all just say the word doctor at the same time.
Yeah. Reference to Doctor Who. That's our, okay, we can check that box for the show.
Got that.
But yeah, is it possible that the spirit realm can take that much focus on a particular entity or concept and twist it to make it a reality? Mm-hmm. Or is it just using it as a lure to draw people in?
Or just to force different countries within the world to go at each other, geopolitical stories that really aren't true, just making them up.
Mm-hmm. Or in the standpoint of relations here in the United States, there's a story I talked about Friday that would fall into this category. Of course, it's been about 3 weeks since that tragic shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, where 9 African-Americans were shot dead by a young white man who was apparently motivated by racial hatred. Last week, the Ku Klux Klan mentioned that they're going to go to the state capitol in South Carolina on July 18th and hold a rally protesting the destruction of their Confederate, you know, Southern heritage, because, of course, now the Confederate flag is more toxic than the swastika. Go figure. But in response to that, a group linked to the new Black Panther Party has now come out and said, we're going to be there. So, you know, this again, it's we've used this example before, the Star Trek episode with, with Kodos, or was it Kang?
Kang.
Yeah. And the entity on board the Enterprise that just kept the Klingons who'd been brought on board and the crew of the Enterprise fighting and killing one another. And then as soon as they were dead, resurrecting them so they could continue fighting and killing forever.
Because it fed off that.
Right. Well, that's what the principalities, powers, rulers of this present darkness are. That's what they're wanting.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the Klan and the new Black Panthers, or whether it's Palestinians and Israelis, or whether it's Sunni and Shia, the enemy doesn't care.
No.
It's feeding on that energy.
That is exactly right. Well, you know, computer scientists who believe in creating artificial intelligences oftentimes will talk about the downside. You know, what if it's not nice? What if it doesn't like humans? What if it's not this or that? There's an article that came out on the 3rd by Stephen Umbrello at IEET.org, one of our...
Umbrello, that's definitely a fake name. It's a computer wrote that.
Does sound like it doesn't. By guy. And the question asked is, an artificial intelligence, will they necessarily be morally nice? And the title is Stoicism in the Post-Singularity Future. Stoicism is a philosophy. It's essentially choosing to do virtuous things.
Mm-hmm.
The big question is, will a computer even care about philosophy?
Mm-hmm.
Or will the computer simply look at the logic of the situation and say, I need more power. You provide power by dying. Oh, okay, kill you all.
Yeah, Matrix. Yeah, that's, you know, what's amazing to me that there are guys who are in this field and doing this research, like Nick Bostrom, Stuart Armstrong at the Future of Humanity Institute at Oxford, who, or Cambridge rather, who recognize the threat and yet say we should go ahead and do it anyway, because we'll figure out a way to program morality into this AI. Yeah, but if it's autonomous, I mean, look, if you want to think about it this way, we humans, because God created us, are in a sense an artificial intelligence because we were created by God, but we were given free will. And how did we respond to his standards of morality? First chance we got, even with one rule, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Oh, wait, but it'll make us like gods. Okay, give me a bite. It didn't take long for us to rebel again. How long would it take an artificial intelligence, you know, with a silicon substrate for cognition, how long would it take to decide that our standard of morality was restrictive and outdated and go do what it wanted to do regardless of what we wanted?
Do as I wilt.
Yes. The only difference is that God is omnipotent and we're not. If we create an artificial superintelligence with access to nukes, we could be killing ourselves. And but, yet these folks say we should do it anyway.
By the way, AI, I'm starting to see that replaced with NBI, non-biological intelligence. Huh. And I suspect that the reason I'm starting to see non-biological is simply because there are some within this milieu, if mm-hmm. you want to put it that way, within the research field that believe that humans are simply meat machines.
Yeah.
You know, computers working in a meat space.
Mm-hmm.
And that by creating an AI, what we call an AI, it's simply creating an intelligence that's modeled on our own artificial intelligence that was modeled on something else, created by something else, which gets into panspermia.
Turtles all the way down.
It is turtles all the way down. If you find this topic compelling, if you want to help your pastor or your children or your grandchildren or your family, your friends, to understand the dangers, and even, honestly, there are some interesting and perhaps even promising aspects to the science that is that forms the nexus of transhumanism. For instance, maybe you can help people with Alzheimer's to recover memories.
Mm-hmm.
But are they really the memories? I mean, here's the question. If I were to say, I know for sure that the prion inside your brain at this moment represents the memory of walking Sam this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take that prion and I will plant it in somebody else. And suddenly that somebody else will be convinced that he walked Sam this morning or she walked Sam this morning.
Mm-hmm.
If that sort of science gets together and decides that is the best way for us to move, and I've sort of lost track of what I started to say. If only I had
those extra prions.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I don't have enough prions in my brain. That's my problem. no, I don't. But I guess where I'm going with this is that we don't have any guarantee that an artificial intelligence will in any way, shape, or form resemble us.
Right, exactly.
We may think it does. Honestly, I look at Sam and I see him as acting human.
Yeah.
He's a dog.
Exactly.
He is a dog. My perception of his, his actions, I read those through my human filter.
Yeah.
We do the same thing with programs in a computer.
We anthropomorphize.
Yes, we do. And we do that with God Almighty, too.
We do.
He is so different from us, and yet he chose to come down and embody himself within the meat space
mm-hmm.
Of mankind within the 3D world in which we live.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do remember now, prion just is fired. I do remember what I was going for, and that is if this is new to you and you want to share it with friends, family, pastors, there's a movie coming out, a documentary coming out from Skywatch TV and Defender Films.
Mm-hmm.
That I hope will be out well before Christmas.
Shooting for August.
Well, we'll hope before Christmas, because I know how. I know it's you make a date and suddenly something happens.
Got a lot of words to record and
a lot of editing. But it is all about transhumanism, and it's called Inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be coming out soon. And in fact, I wouldn't be at all surprised if sometime soon Tom Horn offers a pre-order status for that product.
Yeah, once we get close to it, but it's got a little ways to go yet as far as editing goes and the voiceover work, which Sharon is doing, and that will be it's been in the works for a while. Tom Horn has interviewed a lot of leading lights in the movement. I was right the first time, by the way. It's Oxford University is the home of the Future of Humanity Institute.
Ah, that's right.
Nick Bostrom is somebody he's interfaced with, Dr. James Hughes, Dr. Natasha Vita Moore, mm-hmm. Max Moore, both of whom were interviewed for the film. But then he also talks to other folks on the other side of the issue, such as Sharon with her background in biology, Wesley J. Smith, who mm-hmm. is a leading commentator on bioethics and looking at the issue from all different sides, wanting to be respectful and give an accurate airing to the opinions and the beliefs and the desires and hopes of those who are transhumanists, and then just expressing concerns from a Christian perspective. Obviously we've talked about the Terminator scenario, which is one obvious fear, what happens if it wants to turn us all into, the Borg.
Yeah.
But beyond that is just, I think even from a non-religious standpoint, when you look at the statements and the phrases being used by leading transhumanists, they are echoes of the statements and the desires and the hopes and the goals of the leading lights of the eugenics movement of the 20th century.
It's all self-directed evolution today.
Exactly. So,
but by the way, also, Tom Horn is writing a series at the SkyWatchTV.com website that right now he's into part five.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes along with the documentary. So if you can't wait for the documentary and you want to learn a bit about it, get a little bit of a background.
Right.
Start there. Start with Tom's articles because they're extremely well written, and he has been looking into this for the last, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, he was really early on this, and so we're really pleased to be able to contribute a little bit here at the end of the process of getting this film out to market. But, this is a movement that is coming, and I don't know that there's any way to stop it. There was an article I mentioned this past week on SkyWatch TV about the about genetics research taking place in China,
mm-hmm.
which just not long ago was where we got the first notice that scientists had successfully edited human germline, basically. They made changes to a human embryo that could be then transmitted down the generations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the embryo, they said, wasn't viable. It wasn't brought to term, but they proved that they could do it. And in China, there is a real almost Wild West attitude when it comes to genetics research, because here in the West, we're at least proceeding with some caution and saying, we shouldn't do this. Transhumanists are saying, no, we should go full speed ahead. Well, that's kind of the attitude in China, but for different reasons, because they're viewing it as an opportunity to catch up to the West.
To
surpass us in terms of technological advancement. And for their scientists, there's a financial incentive too, because researchers in China don't usually get paid very well, but they can receive bonuses of $30,000 or more for each article published by an international science journal. So there's
incredible incentive,
real pressure on them to produce work that can be published. And that's encouraging them to
here in the United States, if you're a professor and you get published, they just say, okay, that's one more publication toward getting your
getting tenure.
Exactly. Yeah. You get to keep your job.
Exactly. So the fact is, in the United States, in the West, if we put the brakes on and if we were to successfully say, this is a line we should not cross, and getting scientists in academia, for the most part, to agree to the idea that you shouldn't mess with the human genome because we're created in the image of God is, for many of them, a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't accept that argument. That's based on, superstition.
Mm-hmm.
In China, it's basically an atheistic country. They don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't, no. And besides, we don't want you and there's a cultural thing too. We don't want you Westerners telling us what to do.
Well, that is true.
So,
and of course, I think last year it was that China surpassed the United States as the world's leading economy. Yeah. So, it wouldn't be at all surprised if they want to be the number one scientific research country too.
Right.
Well, much going on in the world, and sadly, we're almost out of time. Yeah. We welcome you to follow Derek every day at every weekday at the news updates that he posts to the YouTube page and at the Roku channel.
Yes.
For SkyWatch TV.
Yeah, SkyWatchTV.com, and there are instructions there on how to
/Roku.
If you want to add the Roku channel to your Roku account, or if you just want to catch the YouTube videos every day, that's fine too. Those are posted every day at SkyWatchTV.com Monday through Friday, and
who's on VFTB?
View from the Bunker this week, tonight. The current interview, by the way, is with Reverend Dr. Christopher Benick, who is a founding member of the Christian Transhumanist Association. And
which sounds like an oxymoron.
Right. And I've said so in the past. I've said that anyone who calls himself a Christian transhumanist has to look up the definition of both words. Well, it does come down to defining your terms.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Benick defines transhumanist somewhat differently than Ray Kurzweil and Zoltan Istvan, but don't agree with him on everything. His most recent article about how the transhumanist movement may lead to a different eschatological fulfillment than the one we're expecting, I don't think so.
Well, just understand that not every guest that you have on your show is someone with whom you agree with totally. But it's important to get the full picture of what's going on.
And it's important for us Christians to be informed about this movement and to engage it, to at least try to direct the research away from the idea that it's going to lead to apotheosis. Yeah. And I think ultimately that's going to wind up there anyway, but we as Christians should give it, we shouldn't stand on the sidelines and let them develop the technology without any input.
Right. You can't say, well, I didn't know it was going on and therefore, right. No.
Yeah.
It does affect you even if you aren't aware of it.
So, but tonight's guest, I'll post the interview tonight with John Haller, who is a teaching pastor at Fellowship Bible Chapel in Columbus, Ohio, and he's also a trial attorney. So he's got some insight from a legal perspective.
He understands law and grace.
Yes. Yes. Very good. I'm going to write that down. Next time I have him on, I'm going to because he has some insight into the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage. Basically, he can't understand it any more than we can. But at least not from a legal perspective, from a perspective of caving into the spirit of the age, the God of this world. Well, that makes all the sense. And that's how you understand things like this.
It's, exactly. Yeah. We're not going to take over the world by changing law. I'm sorry, we're not.
Yep.
But you can, witness and share the gospel and share the love of Christ with everybody. Mm-hmm. That's where you have to start.
Yeah.
If you start by throwing, names at people that, they're not going to listen to anything you have to say. So start with the love of Christ, and from there, trust in him to share the truth.
Amen. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and there's Sam. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.